Hello and welcome back to session 4 of From Sad to Glad, How to Overcome Stress, Anxiety, and Depression and Feel Happy Again. This is Emmett Miller, and I'm here with my illustrious magisterial friend,
Jonathan Robinson.
And today we're going to be talking about positive psychology. You know, there are two approaches for overcoming the SAD syndrome, stress, anxiety, and depression. The first is to lessen the negative. The second is to increase the positive. Kind of reminds me of that song they used to sing back in the 40s. Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. Latch on to the affirmative and don't mess with Mr. in between.
Unfortunately, in our society, we have tended to just focus on trying to lessen or neutralize the negative, thus the big emphasis on antidepressants and therapy. But only in the last 15 years or so have we really focused on how do you increase positive emotion. And as we have focused on that, and a whole new field has arisen called positive psychology, what they have found is that increasing the positive has actually helped people to lessen their negative symptoms, and in fact is probably even more effective than all the things we've been doing to lessen the negative. So the field of positive psychology has come up with really a lot of scientifically validated methods and ideas to help people feel happier and more resilient. Now, by resilient, I mean the ability to bounce back from difficult things. You know, if you're a human being, you're going to experience a certain amount of difficult situations in your life. And some people are really good at bouncing back from that stuff, and other people are really bad at it. You know, it might be a death of someone you care about, a divorce, a job setback. How do you bounce back from those things? Well, in the field of positive psychology, they have found that some people are absolutely marvelous at this. They can bounce back from almost anything with a renewed sense of inner strength and motivation. So as they've studied these people, they've actually come up with a new term called post-traumatic growth syndrome. We've all heard of the term post-traumatic stress syndrome. You know, you get raped or you get a car crash or you see a terrible crime and there's psychological implications that can often last for years. But many people are able to actually take such incidents and use them to improve their life. So we'll talk about some of the things they found in people who display this type of resilience. Now, it's important to point out that positive psychology is not just thinking positive. It's not just, oh, just be happy and don't take things seriously and think happy thoughts and put a smile on your face. They find that people who do that, who live in denial, aren't really any happier than anybody else. The field of positive psychology is really the study of what extremely happy people do and what extremely happy people think, and what extremely happy people tend to use as daily methods that allow them to feel happy even in the face of difficult circumstances. It was started in the mid-90s by Dr. Marty Seligman, a psychologist, who was frustrated with the slow pace of change in the field of psychology in general, and in the field of therapy in particular. And he was interested in studying what very well-functioning people do, and as he started to incorporate some of their methods and ideas into his own life and those of his patients, he found dramatic results. Now, when I say dramatic results, studies have now shown that happy people live 7 to 9 years longer than unhappy people. That's a lot of life. They make about $750,000 more dollars over the course of their life compared to unhappy people in the same jobs. And they have about half the level of divorce and half the level of cancer. Now, they also have many implications on the people around them. Happy people tend to make people around them feel better, and they also make their kids be more successful and happier. So there are a lot of major advantages to learning how to increase the amount of positive feelings in your life. Now, in order to do this, and in order to use these methods, as with any skill, the more you practice it, the better you get. And we're going to give you several different methods this week, and your job, as usual, will be to find the ones that seem to work best for you. But before we go into specific methods, I want to talk a little bit about what Dr. Seligman and other researchers have found a fulfilling life consists of. As they studied thousands of happy people, they found that they all seem to have five things in common in their life. There's endless ways to be miserable, but evidently there's five things you need in order to be happy. And these can be abbreviated through the acronym PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. And each of those initials stand for a different concept. Let's start with P. P stands for either pleasure or positive emotion. And in the typical way people think of happiness, they think of somebody who has a lot of pleasure. You know, they either have a lot of sex, or they have a lot of good food, or they have a lot of nice experiences because they can pay for them. But in the way Dr. Seligman thinks of it, he thinks of it mostly as having lots of positive emotions. People who are happy tend to allow time for positive feelings. Now, this may seem like what anybody would do, but in this day and age of constant busyness and distraction, a lot of people don't have time in their schedule for positive emotion. You know, we work a lot, and then if we're not working, we're taking care of our problems, and soon there's momentum where people just don't allow much space for positive emotions. And I have a confession about this. I used to be one of those people. I used to not allow much time or space for positive feelings. I would notice this in situations where maybe I was playing with my dog, and then a thought would come up, oh, this is just a waste of time. I should get back to work. Or maybe I would have a warm feeling with my wife, a feeling of intimacy. And then I'd think, oh, I gotta take care of the garbage and clean the kitchen. And this is often called the upper limit problem, where you don't allow yourself to have many positive feelings. It's like a temperature gauge, where when it gets too hot in a place, the temperature gauge clicks in and the air conditioning goes on. So as I started to feel good, I would interrupt those feelings by thinking of things I had to do. Does this sound like something you do? Mm-hmm. It's a very common problem. And the ability to allow space and time for positive emotion and not feel guilty about it or feel like you have to do something more important is a very important lesson and one that has really changed my life. So whenever I have a positive feeling now, I now think, well, this is the most important thing. I think I'll stay with this and put off the things I, quote, have to do until later.
I think this is a sort of a culturally determined thing. If we think about children and think about our childhood, there were the schoolwork that we had to do. There was the homework we had to do. There were the chores we had to do. We had to wash and clean up and brush teeth and make beds. And those were the things we had to do. And those were broken by periods of time where we were allowed to go and play. But play wasn't considered to be anything of value. You were just wasting time until you had to go back to work again. And how vividly we may be able to recall being children and being called in from play, time to come in for dinner, time to do your homework, ah, and how it felt. But we were being trained in those days. And so there was a constant association of play and having fun with the feeling of, I gotta go back to work. So of course now, when we begin to play, we begin to feel good at a certain point, that thermostat, as you say, trips itself, and suddenly I'd better get back to work. Of course, we now know that play is the child's work, and that play is a very important kind of work, and that we need to do it. And certainly, if we want to live those extra years and make that extra money and have all that extra fun, we'd better reset our internal thermostats.
So you heard it from the doctor himself. Have a good time in life. That's your prescription, okay? It'll help you live longer. You'll make more money. It will be better for your kids. So just write on that prescription pad.
Right.
Have a good time and play. That's what we're going to do. It really does require breaking those thought patterns that we've been taught and learning the importance of having a good time in life. So that's what the P stands for in PERMA. And that's one of the five keys that happy people tend to do. Now, in order to do this, I actually came up with a method for me that really was very useful, and that was I scheduled play. Now, if I was a sane human being, it would just be part of my life, but I did have this work ethic. So I started every Sunday night to schedule something that would be fun to do that week, or something that would be meaningful and bring me positive emotions. I did this for a couple of years before it started to become, say, more ritualized or more automatic. But I would take out my calendar every Sunday night and I'd ask myself this question. I recommend you do the same. What could I do this week that would bring me fun and more positive emotions? And I would schedule it into my calendar. Now, the great thing about scheduling things is that whatever is in our schedule, we tend to do. When we schedule our work, we tend to work as much as we schedule. If we schedule a doctor's appointment, even if we don't want to go to the doctor or dentist, we do it. So when you see that between 4 and 8 p.m. on Friday, you're scheduled to have a great time with your mate, it makes it easier to avoid whatever feelings of guilt or other thoughts that might come up that you should be doing something else. So that's a great method. Now, a lot of people who I've given this very simple method to have said, wow, that really made a difference in my life. So I encourage you to do that. So a second key in the PERMA acronym is E, which stands for engagement. Now, engagement means that you do activities that engage you and fully absorb you in a meaningful way. Now, that could be such things as sports that you enjoy, or a job that you enjoy, or a hobby, or some kind of artistic creation. The more these types of engaging activities you have, the better. For some people who are very lucky, their job is totally engaging, and they lose track of time, and they lose track of themselves, and they just are fully into their experience. But not everybody can have a job like that. So if you don't have a job like that, it becomes even more important that you find activities or creative expressions that give you that sense of what has often been called flow, where you lose track of time and you're totally absorbed in an activity. For me, it's tennis. I draw mandalas, I write songs, and everybody should have at least 3 or 4 of these activities that just totally absorb you and you look forward to. I wonder, what are some of yours, Dr. Miller?
Music, especially. I didn't know you drew mandalas.
I do. I don't show them because I do them poorly. And in fact, that is not a secret to engagement. You do not have to do something well to be engaged by it. Right. I am a lousy artist. I am a lousy songwriter. That has never in any way stopped me from doing it because I love doing it. And I don't have to worry about it being on the top 40 list because just the act of doing it brings me enough pleasure that I don't have to worry, is it good art?
And laughter. Love to sit around and just laugh with people. There's just some people you find who have such a strange, twisted, funny way of looking at the world. They keep you laughing all the time. I love to be with those kind of people. And time just swishes away. Walking in nature is another one that I love. Mm-hmm. And traveling and meeting people in other cultures, I can become completely lost in those kinds of activities.
As you see, everybody has different ways of getting into engagement. It might be that you love a certain type of movie or a certain TV show. As long as it's not doing harm to you, whenever you find that you can totally lose yourself into an activity, you're doing something good for your mind, body, and emotions. The third letter in the PERMA acronym is R, and that stands for positive relationships. If you learn only one thing in this course, or only one thing in this week's session, that is the importance of relationships in affecting your mind, body, and emotions. When people have a quality and quantity of relationships in their life, it almost always leads to them feeling good. And we're going to talk later about how you might deepen some of your relationships. We have a great technique for doing that. But just making it a priority is a very good first step. And we're not necessarily talking about romantic relationships. Friendships seem to be even more important than one's romantic relationships in helping people to feel good and overcome challenges in their life.
My son talked to me about a certain kind of relationship. He calls them refrigerator friends. Refrigerator friend is someone, if they come to visit you, if they feel they want to eat something, they can go to your refrigerator and get it out. And it, you know, of course, you don't think twice about it. Uh-huh. That's a refrigerator friend. It's a kind of a closeness, a kind of a trust, a kind of bond that exists in a place like that. And you don't have to be lovers, just close enough that, yeah, of course, grab what you want anytime.
That's a nice distinction. Mm-hmm. And I would bet that most of your Facebook friends don't quite make that cut. And in fact, there's a lot of research that shows that people who spend time on Facebook actually end up feeling worse from spending time on Facebook, because everybody's talking about how wonderful their life is on Facebook. And you start to feel jealous.
Because you're just sitting here in front of your computer.
Right. So Facebook friends is not an actual relationship. You have to have one-on-one time or FaceTime with people in a quality way. And by doing that, you definitely are affecting your positive emotions. So in the PERMA acronym, the fourth letter is M for meaning. And all happy people have a sense of meaning in their life. We're going to talk about meaning a lot in the next session, which deals with spirituality. But let me just say a little bit about it right now. In the West, there's kind of an epidemic of lack of meaning. In some cultures, that's not the case. You go to places like Bali or India, everybody has a spiritual foundation or has some kind of sense of meaning, which is almost supplied by the culture. But in Western culture, where there's a lot of materialism, this sense of implied meaning has gotten less and less over the years. So that puts us in the position where we have to go out and create a sense of meaning for ourselves, either through some spiritual belief or through goals that are important to us. And the people who are able to have a sense of meaning, it really doesn't matter what their meaning is. It could be that they want to be one with God, or they want to be the best mushroom expert in the world. It doesn't matter what the meaning is that they find in their life. What matters is their enthusiasm for the meaning that they have found. And as I said, next session, we will be talking about how you can create more of a sense of meaning of your life, or how you can extend the meaning that you already have. But it is important to know that it is important to have, and that our culture is kind of working against us in this very important area of life.
Yeah, I was, as you're talking about meaning, I'm kind of going through these things and asking myself, you know, what's meaningful to me? And I realize there's a lot of things that are meaningful. I have my family and my children, and some of my endeavors like my music. But what flashed in my mind was a young woman who was living in New Jersey in an apartment. She hardly went outside the apartment. She had graduated from college, but couldn't go anywhere after that. She was depressed, and her parents were supporting her. And they said, okay, we'll support you for 6 more months, and then that's it. You've got to do something. And I started talking with her, and because she was out of the state, we started in a coaching relationship. And a beautiful person, but was completely stuck within herself. And it was just a few days ago I talked to her. She's just graduated from medical school, and she's going to be pursuing a career in the field of psychiatry. And 6 years ago, she was in terrible shape. And for me, it's so meaningful to me that someone who felt that terrible could get it together. And I hardly ever saw her in person. It was by communicating with her over the phone and helping her discover her own power and helping her discover the things in her life that were meaningful to her and the things that moved her that created this incredible transformation. She's thrilled with life now. And that has meaning for me, to interact with people and see them transform. I don't know why. Makes me feel just so incredibly happy.
Yeah, that's a good story. And it brings up something I wanted to mention. That is, I was doing research on the single most effective way to help people feel better. What helps people feel positive emotions quicker than any other method? And as I was researching this, I found that there was one method that definitely stood out as being better than every other method.
Tequila?
According to the studies. What?
Not tequila?
Not tequila. Yeah, I was shocked too. Especially because I found that that did work for me. But this one has worked even better. And that is, it's a question. And the question is, what small act of kindness can I do for someone today? And the reason why this question seems to have such a powerful effect on increasing one's level of happiness is that it creates more meaning in one's life. Because when we get out of ourselves and into how we can help others, it automatically brings us more meaning. And we live in a culture in which we kind of glorify I mean, even our phones are called iPhone. But if you want to be happy, you want to be part of an us or a we, because love is always a we. And one way to tap into that in a very quick way is to simply ask that question. What small act of kindness can I do for a friend or stranger today? I recently finished a YouTube video which outlines this technique. It's actually a funny video. It's called Cats, Boobs, and Babies. And the reason it's called Cats, Boobs, and Babies is I asked a friend, what's popular on YouTube? And he said, well, what's popular is Cats, Boobs, and Babies. So I wrote the video called Cats, Boobs, and Babies. And the reason why people are attracted to cats, boobs, and babies is that they make people smile and feel good for a moment. But the best method for helping people to feel good and add meaning in their life is to simply be of service. And if you can find a person or an organization or some way of using your gifts in life to help other human beings, you'll be able to quickly tap into a deeper sense of meaning and therefore be much happier.
Or even if you get an idea walking down the street of how you can interact with somebody in that way. Or right now, pick up your phone and call somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very simple. One of the times when I was on the Oprah show, we talked about this, and she suggested that people do a one-week kindness experiment. And my suggestion was that people do 2 nice things for people around them each day. Because if you do this, you'll get addicted to the process. And these aren't big things. It might just be saying a kind word to somebody. It might be cleaning up something that you normally wouldn't clean up. It might be giving somebody a shoulder massage. But as you tap into this feeling of service, you add both the sense of meaning and a sense of connection or deeper relationships with people. So it's something that you definitely want to pay attention to. Now, the fifth letter in the PERMA acronym is A, and that stands for achievement or accomplishment. And we all know it feels good to accomplish something, whether it be a big goal or a small goal. But one of the things I have found, which is interesting to me, is that when I achieve a big goal, it does not feel significantly better than when I achieve a small goal. You know, sometimes I have finished a book, you know, writing a book, and that's a big goal. And when I do that, I usually feel good for about 10 minutes. And then I go on to the next goal. Well, yesterday I cleaned my desk, which only took 10 minutes, and I felt wonderful. So it's almost like every goal gets the same value, whether it be cleaning your carpet or creating a company. Therefore, you might want to focus on achieving lots of small goals so that you can have that sense of accomplishment in your life on a frequent basis. And they have found that extremely happy people do this. They don't wait until they make a movie. They celebrate all the little accomplishments in life. Now, I have a good friend, and one of the reasons she's a good friend is because every time I tell her something that I accomplished, even if it was something small, like, oh, I just finished reading this book, she responds typically with, yay, or that's great. And that feeling, like, that's an achievement, always makes me feel good. So not only should you celebrate your own accomplishments, but when you celebrate other people's accomplishments, that helps to deepen your relationship and it makes them appreciate you more.
So if you want to think about accomplishment, think about success. What makes you feel successful? And look for little successes that you can achieve every day. Cleaning up your desk or remembering to and accomplishing flossing your teeth, whatever it is, but take a moment and feel the achievement. In fact, for each one of these things, as you do each of the behaviors we're talking about, stop for a moment and feel the feeling that goes along with it. What we're talking about is how to do things that create positive emotions and positive feelings. And the second piece is feel those feelings, your emotions, your feelings of joy, your feelings of success or engagement or love. Those positive feelings are like the jet fuel that will fuel the changes you want to make in your life.
Such important points, and I'm glad you said that again, because it's not easy if you've been trained to disregard positive feelings, to allow them space. So it will take some time. And for me, it's an ongoing experiment. And every time I notice myself, I catch myself in either joy or peace or intimacy. I try to take a deep breath and let it in further and not immediately go on to the next thing. Those feelings are precious. So PERMA represents the five key things almost all very happy people are doing. And by engaging each of these five elements in your own life, you'll start to feel better. So I recommend that you focus on whichever one calls out to you and try to take it a little bit more deeply. Once again, those five things are positive emotion, engagement, relationships, meaning, and a sense of achievement. Now, I read recently that, and I like this quote, that success is getting what you want, and happiness is wanting what you get. I like that. We've been taught that you can only be happy once you achieve something, once you get everything in your life to be just the way you want. And that's really not true. You know, people who have a lot of control or a lot of money are not any happier than people who are with less control and money. But if you can be happy with what you get and see the meaning in it and still have a sense of achievement for the little accomplishments that you have in your life on a day-to-day basis, then you'll likely be very happy. And when you are happy, you're more likely to be successful. As I mentioned before, happy people make a lot more money, they live longer, just because people would rather be around people who feel good. So besides these helpful ideas, there's also a lot of many validated methods or techniques that positive psychology has found to increase happiness in people. And I want to go over some of these techniques. Now, when they were first studying these methods, they really had no idea what worked. So that's why they had to put them into double-blind, placebo-controlled experiments. You know, because if you use anything, it's likely to help a little bit because of the placebo effect. But they were really shocked to find that some methods didn't work at all that they thought would work really well, and other methods, which they didn't think would be that impactful, seemed to have huge impacts. So I want to go into a couple of the more powerful methods that they found work on a long-term basis. And one of them, my favorite, and probably the most studied for its impact, is something called Three Good Things. Now, Three Good Things was a method that Marty Seligman created, and as he studied it, he was really flabbergasted with how effective it was. I'm going to describe the method and then describe a little bit of how it works in my own life. The basic method is right before you go to bed, you think of three good things that happened to you that day. Now, these could be small things, such as the nice conversation you had with a coworker, or they could be big things, such as the promotion you got that day. It really doesn't matter the size. But with each thing that you think of, you then ask, why did this thing happen? Why did this good thing happen? Now, before I go into that part of it, which is really the key to the technique, let me see if I can get you enrolled in the method. Studies show that if you won the lottery tomorrow, if you won over $1 million in the lottery tomorrow, your happiness level would jump about 25% for about 2 weeks. 25% jump in your happiness level is very high. That's a big jump. But after those 2 weeks, your happiness level would start dropping, and soon you would be right back to where you were.
Is that because you'd find out how much tax you had to pay on it?
That's one of the things, yes. And all the friends asking for money now. Because little things like that, they do have a lot of downsides to them. Mm-hmm. Now, if you do the three good things method, you'll find, according to studies, that your happiness level will go up by about 1% per week. It's a slow drip method, but it accumulates. So by the end of 25 weeks, you are 25% happier, but it stays 25% happier. You don't get that fall off like you do when a good event happens in your life. So you can feel as good as if you won the lottery by doing this simple exercise. But unlike the lottery, you can maintain that good feeling. There are very few methods in which that good feeling is maintained, but according to several studies, this method called Three Good Things is able to accomplish that. So let me go a little bit more into the method. You think of something good that happened to you, big or small, during the day, and then you ask yourself, why did that good thing happen? And the key to this method is that you come up with a characteristic or ability or a trait you have that made that good thing more likely. So let me try this with you, Emmett, and see if I can guide you through this and see how it works. So What's something that has happened to you in the last 24 hours that you consider good?
I consider really good that I got together all of the notes to prepare for our our meeting today.
Okay. So why would you say that that good thing happened?
Because I took the time to prepare for it in advance.
Okay. Now, there's many levels that one can answer a question like that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to answer that on various levels and show people how you can really tap into a very powerful good feeling just by knowing how to answer that question in the deepest way. So I asked, well, why'd the good thing happen that you got the notes together and had a good time preparing? Well, one thing that you could have done, which you didn't, is you could have, quote, blamed me. You could have said, well, you emailed me to get the notes together. But had you answered that way, that wouldn't have led to a good feeling for you.
Mm-mm.
So that's not a good way to answer that question. And a lot of people, when you ask them, well, why did you have that good lunch or why did you get a promotion? They will literally blame other people for it without taking any credit. And that's not the way you want to use this technique. So in this case, you mentioned that this good thing happened because you're willing to take the time and plan in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true, and you can take that even farther. You can say, well, I've learned over the course of my life to allocate my time well so that I am not stressed out all the time and rushing around, and I created enough space in my life to do this. And that's really quite an accomplishment for me because I used to be somebody who was different than that. And that could be a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could take it farther and you could say, well, one of the reasons that I'm even doing this whole project is that you and I have made a connection. You know, I'm just a guy who came to you with an idea. And I would say it's because you are open-minded. You're willing to form connections with new people. You're willing to explore together. You're willing to work together. Believe me, I've worked with several medical doctors. You're by far the easiest one ever to work with. You have a great sense of humor. And all these things are really why we're doing this in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that towards you. I feel like, wow, I'm really lucky to be working with this well-known doctor who has a good sense of humor, who's willing to explore and have fun and work together and is easy to work together. I feel all that. I'm experiencing those good things. So hopefully you are, and that you're aware of those good things in you that is allowing this whole project to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot there. So there's a lot of levels that one can answer this question.
Right. And I think about the really powerful tools that we're giving people and how many people are going to listen to this and their lives are going to change and how many people they're going to recommend it to. And I kind of see a whole cascade of positivity spreading out into the universe from this moment right here.
I hope so. And that's just answering one good thing. So mm-hmm. What's another good thing that's happened in the last 24 hours? And once again, it can be really small. It could be as simple as mm-hmm. I had a nice interaction with, you know, somebody on the phone today or whatever it is. But why don't you go over one more? And
I played ball with my dog today.
Okay, good. So why did that good thing happen?
It happened because she was begging me. And I thought...
Now, let me make a note here. He just blamed the dog on this good thing, which is very common. You want to make sure that you don't do that. You uh-huh. want to, or at least after you do that, to take it back to some trait or characteristic in you
yeah.
that you can feel good about.
Yeah. And then I looked at her and I realized how much pleasure she has in running after this silly little ball. And I just says, I'm going to engage with her and see that joy. Mm-hmm. And I threw that ball out and she was ecstatic. Like this wasn't just a ball, this was the most special ball in the whole world. And I kind of caught a little bit of that feeling.
Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting one, because the way I would word this is that you have an ability to get joy from other people's and animals' joy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such an incredible ability. And some people really are very low on that scale.
Mm.
But I have seen that trait in you, and I've seen you throw that ball for your dog and see that big smile on your face. And it's an incredible trait and characteristic. Because if you can get happy from other people's and animals' joy, you are in a good position in life. Mm. So congratulations, and that you're willing to take the time to feed that trait. So when you answer the questions in these ways, where you trace it back to a characteristic or trait in you, you start to feel good, like, wow, mm-hmm. I am easy to work with, and I do have a good sense of humor, and I do take joy in other people's joy. And you start to feel like, I am, you know, a blessed person.
I'm a good guy, and by George, people like me.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you do this every day, you start to feel pretty good about yourself. In fact, people who do this often can go from low self-esteem to feeling that sense of confidence and sense that they are a healing presence in the world, which goes back to our sense of meaning. You start to feel like your life and the moments in your life are inherently meaningful. So your level of positive emotion goes up. As your positive level of emotion goes up, your stress, anxiety, and depression go down. Now, I'm a lazy person, so I tend to do one good thing each day before I go to sleep. You know, I should do three good things, but even one, and tapping into that feeling of savoring that sense of, wow, I'm pretty lucky that I have that trait or ability, and really sitting with that feeling and allowing it to permeate, really it takes probably a minute.
I had a friend whose father, I mean, he just used to, each night when the family would sit around the table, there were three kids, and the parents would be there, and the question every night was, he would go around the table and he'd say, share something really positive that happened to you today, something you really feel good about, something really good that happened to you or that you did. And, you know, the first few times that it happened, you know, people feel on the spot and you're really not sure what to say. But, you know, pretty soon the kids got the idea. And so they kind of go through the day, and when something good would happen, they go, ooh, I have something I can share tonight. And so they'd come to the table with this whole positive expectation, knowing that in a moment dad's going to ask this question and they're going to eagerly say this. And then, of course, a little later in the day, something else good would happen. They go, oh no, maybe I'll tell this. And their whole perspective on life began to change just by their doing a version of that three good things.
Yeah, that's a nice story. And I've heard of families that do that. And it's a nice ritual to have with your kids or your spouse. My wife and I will often ask each other, what's one good thing that happened to you today? And then ask, why did that happen? And it's a great way to tap into connecting with each other and hearing about each other's day, and also deepening our relationship with ourselves. And as Dr. Miller mentioned, when you do this method on a regular basis, a part of your brain starts to look for good things. It starts to be on the lookout. And you start to develop that part where you're not just looking for bad things and thinking about problems, but you are naturally looking for what is good in your life. And that's part of the power of this method as well. Now, as you do this method, it does accumulate effect, meaning the more you do it, the more impact it has on your life. So I would really suggest that you do this as a nightly ritual, even if you're only doing one good thing, that you'll start to get hooked on it, because it is a good feeling. And as you do it night after night, you will start to feel better and better about yourself and your life. Some studies have shown that this might be the single most effective way of overcoming mild to moderate depression that is out there, more than antidepressants and more than other methods that we talked about. So this is not just a throwaway method. This is one of the key technologies we have for overcoming stress, anxiety, and depression and feeling happy again. So I hope that you'll at least try it out. We have included a handout, a 2 or 3 page handout that describes the method in detail with some examples, and it will be a good reminder. And if you have somebody that you would like to buddy up with to use this method, they can read that handout and use the method with you. Now, one of the reasons why the three good things method works so well is it has you focus on what is already good in your life, which takes us to the subject of gratitude. The field of positive psychology has found that gratitude is one of the keys to feeling higher levels of happiness and joy.
The one little story that's always represented gratitude for me had to do with a fellow who was driving his car through Texas on one of those really rainy days where the rain is coming down in sheets from the Gulf of Mexico. But his car is running out of gas, so he stopped in the gas station. Of course, you have to pump your own gas. You don't pump your own gas there. And the attendant had to come out, and the fellow rolled his window down, and the attendant standing there in this downpour, and he said to him, he says, "I'm so sorry to bring you out of your warm shelter on this really terrible day, but I'm just completely out of gas." And he looked up into the guy's eyes, and the guy had a big smile on his face, and he said to the driver, he said, "You know, buddy, 6 months ago, I was in a foxhole in Vietnam, and I swore that if I ever got out of that foxhole, I would never complain about anything again. Want me to check your oil?" Mm-hmm. Gratitude.
Yeah. You know, many years ago, I did this book called The Experience of God, in which I interviewed everybody from Mother Teresa to the Dalai Lama.
And
about
me.
And you. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I interviewed you. You didn't quite compare to Mother Teresa and the Dalai Lama, so excuse me for forgetting that.
But I was much older then.
But, you know, one of the things I learned from interviewing 40 spiritual leaders was that gratitude was probably the number one method they suggested for growing a deep spiritual connection. And that impacted me. So I have focused on that method. And many years ago, the story I tell where I'd heard of an Indian guru who had supposedly a magical mantra he gave to his students that made them feel overwhelming gratitude. So being that I always like good methods, I decided to actually travel all the way to India to hear what this guy had to say. So I made plans, and it wasn't easy to get there. I mean, I had to take a week off from work and travel 18 hours by plane. And then when I got there, you know, you take a rickshaw through traffic for several hours. And I finally got to the ashram, and I was completely worn out and jet lagged. But I desperately wanted to hear what this magical mantra was that this guru had. So I sat in line for like 3 hours, and I finally got to have a private audience with him. And I told him I was from America and really wanted to get this mantra, which I had heard had affected so many people's lives and helped them to feel overwhelming gratitude. And he said in his deep Indian accent, yes, my mantra is the most powerful mantra on earth. And he said, since you come all the way from America, I will tell you what my mantra is. And he leaned in to whisper it into my ear because he didn't want everybody who was just casually there to find out what the mantra was. So he's leaned into my ear and he's whispering. He says, whenever possible, repeat the following words in your head. The magical mantra I give you are the words, thank you. Well, I said, that's it? And he said, no, that's it, is a mantra you have been using, and that mantra makes you feel like you never have enough. My mantra is the words, thank you, not that's it. That's it will take you nowhere. But thank you will quiet your mind and open your heart. You know, well, I didn't know what to say. I thought he was joking for a moment, but he was serious. You know, I traveled 25 hours to get to this guy and spent thousands of dollars and taken a week off, and he gives me the words, thank you. Well, I was pretty pissed off. But I figured since I traveled that far, I might as well try out what he said. So I started to say thank you for each thing that happened during my day. You know, I went outside and it was a nice sunny day. So I said, thank you. And he did give me the instruction, you can't just say it from your head. You have to say it as if your heart was saying it. So I said, thank you for this beautiful day. And, you know, I realized that I was healthy, so I said, thank you for my health. And then I was hungry, so I went to a restaurant and got some food and, you know, realized I had money in my pocket, and I said, thank you for that. Not everybody has money in their pocket. Then I went back to my hotel and took a shower. You know, not everybody has a nice shower to take every day. So I said, thank you to that. And this momentum developed where I started to feel grateful for each person and each thing in my life. And within about 2 hours of getting this, quote, magical mantra, I was feeling overwhelming gratitude. I remember somebody came by and said, can I offer you clean towels? And I had like tears of gratitude. They didn't know what was going on, but it really did work, and it really can work in your life. Now, the problem is that our mind is always thinking, that's it, or what's missing. And it does require a discipline of focusing on gratitude, either by saying thank you and developing a momentum of gratitude, or by having some other kind of gratitude ritual, such as making a gratitude list. Some people have suggested that before you go to sleep each night, that you write several things that you're grateful for. This is a little bit like the three good things list, but a little bit different. But what I recommend is that you make one big list of everything you're grateful for and put it on your computer. And when you need a refresher, just read that list. Might be once a week or once a month. But by having that list, you'll have something to go back to. And you can always add new things to that list of new things to be grateful for. And once again, you can get as much juice from feeling grateful for a good pen as you can for feeling grateful for a good job. So it's really a matter of quantity and momentum and being willing to give this sense of gratitude enough space in your life and enough possibility that you're able to tune into its magical experience. So that's a little bit about gratitude. I hope you'll take on that experiment, and that whether you do it for a little bit each day or a little bit each week, that you tune into it from your heart, because gratitude from your head is very different than gratitude from your heart. And that's why it's sometimes important to think about who you're saying grateful things to. Are you saying grateful things? Are you saying thank you to life? Are you saying thank you to your higher self? Are you saying thank you to people? Are you saying thank you to God? All of these are good ways of feeling grateful, but you want to find the methods that work best for you. I tend to say thank you to existence, and I really feel grateful that I'm given this life, I'm given this opportunity to speak or eat this food or whatever it is, and that helps me to focus and be in my heart. Once you develop the ability to feel grateful for the good things in your life, you then may want to go to the advanced course. The advanced course is where you start to feel grateful for the challenges in your life. This could be something like, you get sick. And you think, I'm sick. That's the normal thing that people feel. But you could think, well, I could feel grateful that normally I'm well, or that I have access to medicine, or I have access to aspirin to make me feel better, or I have the ability to feel grateful for challenges in my life. And that's another more advanced way of feeling grateful. But you probably shouldn't start there, because feeling grateful for the difficult things in your life is not easy. I did come up with a method that helped me to do that, and I want to tell you about that method. And it's based on this idea that happy people are almost always optimistic. They look on the bright side of things by habit. You know, for a lot of people, their mind is like Velcro. It just attaches and attracts negativity, and it doesn't let it go. Whereas happy people, their mind is like Teflon. It makes negativity easily wash off, and good things in life are like Velcro to a happy person's mind. And the way that you can start to tune into this, if your mind isn't naturally like that, I know mine wasn't, is you can ask yourself a good question. And the best question I've come up with is the question, what could be good about this? The question, what could be good about this, is a great question, because in anything that happens, we're always interpreting what are the implications. So you lose your job. Well, you don't normally ask what could be good about this. Your mind naturally asks what could be bad about this, and it usually comes up with lots of stories to come up with to make you feel bad. Or a relationship ends, or a conversation doesn't go good. Well, your mind naturally supplies the question, what could be bad about this? But happy people actually habitually ask that question, what could be good about this? You know, recently I had an experience where I was going to do a happiness workshop on the East Coast. But as I arrived at the airport, they told me that my plane ticket was not in their system, and that I would have to buy a whole new plane ticket to get there. Well, my plane was leaving in like 40 minutes, and I said, how much would it be? And they said, $6,000 to get to the East Coast. Well, at that moment, I was pretty upset. But I asked myself, what could be good about this? And the first thing my mind said was, nothing. But, you know, when you're going to teach a class on happiness, you can't allow yourself to wallow in negativity for too long. So I said, well, it could be a good story someday. And at least they have an open seat. So I said, that could be good about this. And I don't know, maybe the plane I was going to be on is going to crash and I'll survive because I'm not on that plane. That was about the best I could do. But it ends up, I got on this plane. I paid the ridiculous amount of money to get to the East Coast. And I met somebody on that plane who I'm now good friends with. So there was something good that happened as a result of my plane ticket not being in their system. Then I called the airport, or I called United Airlines, and it was their fault. So they paid not only the $6,000 for the first class flight to the East Coast, but they paid me for the plane ticket I was going to have. So I got free first class fare to the East Coast. So that was good. But then I wrote a story about this whole thing, and it got into an online bulletin and went viral, and several million people saw this story. And I got dozens of comments from the people saying that this question and the story really impacted their life. So you never know what good is going to happen from something. We're making it all up in our head. But normally we're just making it up that there's bad things. And this technique of asking that question, what could be good about this, can interrupt that momentum of negativity and help you to even tune into positive outcomes, which you normally wouldn't have thought of.
Things work out best in life for people who make the best out of how things work out.
You are good with those short statements. I got to learn what website you're reading those from.
Well, when I woke up, and I woke up this morning and realized that there was no water coming out of my tap. And I says, my mind immediately went to something terrible has happened. And so we checked the water tank, and the water tank was empty and the pump wasn't running. And so my mind immediately went to the wells run dry. You know, that's when you live in a semi-arid country like this, your well running dry, that's no small thing. I wasn't going to know anything until the well repairman arrived, and I knew that was going to take several hours after I made the phone call. And so what I did at that moment was say, well, you know, I have a choice of whether I'm going to think about all the bad things that can happen or not. And I wasn't able to think about anything really good that could happen because my well ran dry. That went beyond me. But I did realize that if I could wait until I got the report from the well repairman, what the story was, wait until then. If there was something to feel bad about, I could do it then. Mm-hmm. I didn't need to do it right now. And hour after hour, as I'm waiting for him to arrive, and as I'm doing my work, you know, each hour I would sort of check and say, "Ooh, look at that, I haven't thought about it at all. 3 hours and I haven't dwelled on it at all." And for a mind like mine, it tends to go to the negatives. I mean, you're trained in medicine, you're trained to have what they call a high index of suspicion, mm-hmm. you know? And so that was already a victory, even by the time the well repairman called and said it was a broken wire.
So a good thing that happened as a result of this is you saw that this stuff really works.
Yes.
And you got a good story out of it.
That's right.
You see? You never know.
So and maybe it'll go viral. And I'll be on the Oprah show.
And then you'll be elected president of the United States and rule the world.
Oh, no, no.
So you never know. We're making it all up all the time. We don't know what anything means. But by asking this question, you at least become less sure of negative meanings that you're creating in your head. And you may even come up with positive meanings that further empower you. So optimism is a key component of positive psychology, and you can learn to tune into optimism through simple methods such as that. I mentioned earlier that I want to make sure that you have the ability to connect deeply in relationships, so I want to say something about one of the handouts you have for this week's session. It's called Creating a Deeper Connection, and it's a very simple method. It takes about half an hour or 40 minutes, and you do it with one other person. It can be a friend, a stranger, a lover, a child, anybody. And it's a series of questions that you both answer. All the instructions are right there. And it's a great way to deepen any relationship. And when you have moments of intimacy like that, that is a very powerful way of not only feeling good, but helping you be resilient when you do face times of challenge. I have a lot of people have told me that this Creating a Deeper Connection handout, which I've supplied with for you, has had a major impact on one of their relationships. And I hope you take the time to explore that with somebody. Now, you could just read through the questions and think, well, they're interesting questions, but it's really in the sharing of our vulnerable selves that relationships can deepen. I mean, if you look at the word intimacy, it has the instructions for intimacy right in there, into me see. But we live in a very superficial age where it's sometimes hard to get below the surface to our real selves and share from a deeper place. And this structured exercise is one great way of doing that. And I know that if you do it, you'll feel much more connected to an important person in your life. I also have the handout on the top 10 quickest ways to boost your happiness. This is according to studies, what are the top 10 quickest ways to boost your happiness? And there's a lot of great suggestions. Some of them we talked about in the first week's session, and some of them we've talked about today. But it's a nice reference, and I'll just remind you a couple of them. One of them, if you feel a little bit down in the dumps or you want to extend a good mood, just sing or dance and play music that you like, and that's going to help you to feel better very quickly. We already mentioned the idea of acts of kindness as the number one way to boost your level of happiness quickly. And once again, these need not be big things. It might be a little love note for your child or your mate. It takes 30 seconds. It makes your day, makes you happier, makes them happier. And when you can boost the level of happiness of those around you, you know the saying, what goes around comes around. So I hope that you'll experience that as well. But this is a good reference list to have, and some of them are things you probably wouldn't think of, like to get cooler, you know, number 7 on this list. Well, if you're warm, you have a more likely chance to feel either stressed or anxious or depressed than if you feel the right temperature or a little bit cool. So little things like this can make a big difference, and your job is to explore which ones work the best for you. I do want to mention one of my personal favorites, and that is play and humor. Now, people sometimes say I'm very funny, which I appreciate. My friends say I'm very funny. That's probably why they're my friends. And I used to not be funny at all. As a kid, I had no sense of humor and was not playful one iota. And I started to see that, wow, humor and play is a good way to meet girls. So I started to become very focused on this. And one day I was actually in line at a grocery store, and I came upon Bill Cosby. This is many years ago. And I said, gee, I love your humor. And I asked him, have you always been so funny? And he said, no, he wasn't always so funny, but he soon saw that humor made everything better. He said, money makes some things better, but you can't take it with you wherever you go. But humor, you can take into every situation, and it makes your relationships better, it improves your health, it improves the caliber of your day if you're laughing and seeing the funny edge of things. So by focusing on something like that, you can definitely learn that skill, and it can make your whole life better. Have you always been funny? You seem to have a good sense of humor. Especially for a doctor.
People always have said I was kind of funny. But I don't think that's what they meant.
I don't think that's what they meant, Jeff.
I always wanted to be funny. So I always tried to be funny. I think I actually got better through the years. I think in the beginning I was silly, but at least I was having fun.
Yeah, you know, it may be that your humor doesn't play on other people. At least it can make yourself laugh. And since you spend a lot of time with yourself, that's a good start.
Absolutely. And you know, Arthur Koestler wrote a book called The Act of Creation. And he pointed out that every event, everything that happens, can be looked at in any one of three ways. First is the purely scientific way, which is, you know, A plus B equals C. There's no humor or pain or anything, is just a fact. It can be looked at as a tragedy and you can feel bad about it, or it can be seen from a humorous perspective. Every situation has all of those components in it if you really look at it, and if you know how to look at it. And so having read that, I began to look to see how I could find a humorous way to look at everything that comes out that looks like it could be negative and painful. Okay, but still, why not try to find the humorous? And very often you do, and it lightens the load enormously.
You know, one of the happiest people I've ever met was the Dalai Lama, and here's a guy who's not had an easy life. I mean, basically, his friends and family were tortured for years. He has had to live in exile, but he has a wonderful sense of humor, and he's like a little kid, and it's a pleasure to be around him. In fact, studies show that the average 4-year-old laughs 102 times a day, whereas the average 14-year-old laughs 2 times a day. So somehow we teach people to go from being joyous, laughing, giggling people to very serious. And that's unfortunate, because in a stressful world, laughter and a sense of humor can often be the best medicine.
I talked to a fellow from India, and in India they have laugh clubs, where people get together, 50, 100, 300, 400 people in a theater, and they just laugh and it makes everyone feel really good. Mm-hmm. And he said, in the beginning, in order to get people to laugh, they would tell jokes. But it turned out that no matter what joke they told, it always offended someone mm-hmm. who would then come up at the end and be really sour and say, oh, I don't know. So
you then, really shouldn't make fun of gay albino people.
That's
you
know, right. Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And so they just went to just laughing. And the technique is interesting. First, they teach you how to breathe. And you huff, 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 and you go, huff, and then you put sound to it. Ha ha ha. Ho ho ho. Hey hey hey. Ha ha
ha. You have talent for that.
And you get a room full of 100 people doing that, and people have the weirdest, you know, people sound like chickens when they laugh. Right. And you hear people laugh, and that makes you laugh, and it really raises your spirits. Try it sometime when nobody's around.
Or when a lot of people are around, you know, laughing in a group is a lot of fun. So let me talk about one last thing, and that is play. We talked about humor, and it's related. But play is really something that we're born being able to do. You know, three-year-olds say, do you want to play? They don't say, would you like to have a long-term relationship? You know, they play, and animals play. So we should be able to play. But as adults, a lot of times what I see is people don't play anymore. They don't play tennis. They compete at tennis. Mm. And competing at tennis and winning at tennis is different than playing at tennis. So we have to learn how to play and enjoy, whether it be board games or sports or music, and allow that silly, playful little kid in us to come out. And that's where a lot of positive emotions can come out as well, which, remember, are one of the best antidotes to stress, anxiety, and depression. So whatever helps you to play, for me, I like playing sports and playing music. I'm not good at either of them, but I do experience that childlike joy, so I keep on doing them. So we have a lot of exercises for you this week. We have the 3 good things exercise. We have the top 10 quickest ways to boost your happiness, such as through kindness and other methods. We have the handout for creating a deep connection. And we also talked about gratitude and what could be good about this. So lots of methods to tap into the power of positive psychology and use it as a healing tonic in your life. And you'll only know it works if you use it. So once again, our little plug that you keep track of these things by going to the rating sheet, seeing the list, trying them out, and then rating how well it worked for you. That way, you'll know what to use in the future and what was not a good investment in your time. And by doing these little things, you'll get better and better at it to the point where something like feeling grateful from your heart or asking the question, what could be good about this, becomes a habit. Because these other things, such as what could be bad about this, which is the tendency of our mind, are also habits. And we need to replace some of those habits with things that are going to lead us to being happier and more successful on a daily basis. We also talked about the PERMA, the positive emotion, engagement, relationships, meaning, and accomplishment, as ideas that can accelerate your ability to experience more positive emotions and less negative emotions. So any final words you might want to add, Emmett?
Well, yeah, I'd say in remembering your positive playlist, your set of songs that make you happy or music that makes you happy. Make yourself a playlist, make yourself a CD or whatever you need. And then when you need a little uplift, play that music and sing along with that music. Go see a comedy, a play that's a comedy or a funny movie or something like that. Or, you know, go listen to some jokes or remember positive jokes that you know. You know, by the way, you know the new Pope had all of the urinals in the Vatican raised by 6 inches?
Why is that?
He wanted to keep the cardinals on their toes. Okay. Now, actually, this joke was told at a party. One lady told these other two ladies, and they all laughed pretty uproariously. And the lady who told the joke went away, and one of the remaining turned to the other, and she says, "That was really funny, but one thing I don't understand, what's a urinal?" And the other one says, "I don't know, I'm not Catholic."
Okay, well, with that, we will bid you good health and mirth, and make sure that you do the exercises when you feel ready to go on to the next session, which is week 5, where we'll be focusing on spirituality and meaning. We will be there for you. We suggest roughly a week to 10 days is good, but do what works for you. And we hope that you have a wonderful week until we talk to you next.
So, saying goodbye, this is Emmett Miller.
And Jonathan Robinson.
Have a great day.